Folks, I am really excited to talk about our newest sponsor for the coaching staff, Ruiz Auto Services and Exhaust, also All-American Used Cars and Trucks. Two really, really good businesses. I'm going to start with Ruiz Auto Services and Exhaust. You know, it's hard to find a good mechanic. It's hard to find somebody that you trust. And, you know, long before this situation came about, we had been taking our cars to Ruiz for a year, year and a half, and they've done great, great work. They're honest. They're upfront. They can do everything. They, you know, take care of your motor, take care of your brakes, tires, oil, so simple stuff like oil changes, brake pads, mufflers, whatever you may need. Ruiz Auto Services and Exhaust are going to take care of it for you. If you are in the Omaha area and you are looking for a quality, reasonably priced, customer-friendly situation, you're not going to regret giving Ruiz Auto Services and Exhaust a chance here. They are located at 4839 North 90th Street, Omaha, Nebraska, 68134. You could give Esmeralda a call up there. Her number is 402-317-2572. And they'll get you taken care of. I'm saying this as a customer. We literally do not bring our cars anywhere other than Ruiz Auto Service and Exhaust for anything that we do from this point for the last year or two. So again, another business here, All American Used Cars or Trucks. If you're in the market for a used car or truck, go check out Juan Carlos's business there. 144th and I-80, 14706 Schooner Road here in Omaha. Go check it out here. If you're looking to exchange a car, buy, sell, trade, whatever it may be, you're going to get an honest deal from honest people. So go check out Ruiz Auto Service and Exhaust and All American Used Cars and Trucks. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. My name is Marty Plum, and I am your host of A Pen and a Napkin Podcast, the weekly coaching clinic you can carry around with you in your pocket. Welcome back to the coaching staff, episode number 120. It is not quite Saturday Night Live, 50 years of Saturday Night Live, but, you know, we've been doing this for a little while, at least. We got ways to go till we get to, you know, 50 years, Tony, but we got at that point, let's see, if we went 50 years, that means I would be 72.
Good math. That's good math.
Well, according to my checkbook, I have $1.5 million in there, too. So, you know, that's how good I am.
You should be an accountant.
I'd be accounting wrong. That's before. We lost them. We lost them already.
Right, the quickest ever.
Yes. All right. Episode number 120. I'm not sure if Ruiz Auto Services and Exhaust and All American Used Cars and Trucks want to be associated with this program after that introduction. But they are. Mr. Tony Divas, how are things with you, my friend?
Cold, my man, cold. I've heard in the morning with the wind chill, we're going to be negative 20, I think negative 30s on Tuesday. So, yeah, it's Antarctic-ish.
Antarctic-ish. Is that a word? Is that a real word?
It is now. It is now.
Are we thinking snow day?
I'm thinking late start. Probably through at least till Friday.
Gotcha. Well, hey. Late start, sleep in a little bit, you know, nothing wrong with that. So
no,
not at all. Episode number 120, having players relax under pressure. Tony, we have some, oh my goodness, do we have some number 20s here. Barry Sanders, probably the best running back I've ever seen. I don't know how you feel, but.
Yeah, him and Walter Payton, one of those two.
Yeah. Ed Reed, Frank Robinson, Mike Schmidt. Lou Brock, Don Sutton, Jorge Posada, Luis Gonzalez. So we've got some ballers here. I've got five really, really nice basketball players here as well. I think three of the five are surefire Hall of Famers if they're not in already. Two of them, really nice NBA players.
Okay. The only one I can think of off the top of my head, and I hope this is right, Ray Allen.
Ray Allen, you are correct.
I am drawing blanks in the 20s of the NBA.
Let's see here. Mr. Mean.
I think that was the nickname of Larry Meeshaw when he was with the Houston Cougars at that college.
Yeah. Let me get you. You're going to put these on your hand if you have a late start this week, and that was this guy's nickname.
Ooh, Gary Payton.
Yes.
He's on right now on the NBA All-Star.
Oh, is he really?
I'm doing priming.
Yeah, hey, not bad. So let's see here. The South American in that we credit with, yes, with the Euro step. He's Argentinian, but we say it's the Euro step. Let's see here. So that's three. Almost hit the greatest shot in college basketball history.
Is that Gordon Hayward?
That's Gordon Hayward. That is correct. And the last one here, I don't know. He may have a problem. From Apollo 13. Blank, we have a problem.
Yeah, it's Houston.
First name?
Give me the second.
Houston. Zach Galifianakis' character from The Hangover.
Allen
Houston is correct. There it is. All right. A little bit of help, but we got there.
We got there eventually.
So, all right. Having players relax under pressure. Tony, I think, you know, obviously we're stepping into the postseason time period. You know, players are geeked up. We're at the you know, the light is at the end of the tunnel, but now the pressure becomes bigger and bigger. And the farther you go, as you and I well know, the pressure becomes just a little bit tighter every single step of the way. And I think it's important, as most coaches would say, I mean, this is kind of the Captain Obvious segment of the program, how you want your players to be relaxed in the biggest moments of them all. How do we get them to that point? And I think that's one of the great arts of coaching.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. A few years ago, I decided to go back, you know, at the ripe old age of whatever I was at that time and get my master's. And
26.
Part of my master's. Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, I'd be like 74 if we were to do our 50th. But anyway, and part of it was social emotional learning. And so kind of dove into this side of it. And some of these things were when I wrote the big paper at the end, a lot of these things were in that paper. And the first one that it just throws in there is the breathing techniques. And, you know, that was one, I think a lot of times, whether it was a timeout or free throws or whatever, that we still kind of emphasize with our guys, just to take that, you know, big deep breath and then take your time and, you know, as far as getting it out, but just get that breathing to slow down a little bit. And I think it helps time to kind of slow down a little bit as well. So you're not thinking the time's going, what's the difference? Fine. You know, it's 1,001, 1,002 type of thing. But I think breathing is one of the things that can really kind of lower your anxiety and help you to keep your composure when those stressful moments get to that top level.
Mm-hmm. A real high on my list of book recommendations, Tony, is a book called Beyond Grit, written by Dr. Sindra Kampoff, a maiden named Cindy Skelling, Sheldon Oreb, class of 94, and married my buddy Danny Kampoff, former Pizza Ranch worker, Pizza Ranch number 10 in the house, Sheldon, Iowa, USA. But Cindy wrote this book called Beyond Grit. She's a mental a sports psychologist, essentially, worked with the Vikings, worked with a lot of different teams. And, one of the big things that she talked about in that book was breathing. And I know that's something that we talked about, probably should have talked about it more with my players than I did. But we talked about it a little bit. But one of the things that I started doing before games is I would find a corner and for 3 to 5 minutes, I would do my breathing exercises to kind of slow my own heart rate down, to kind of get myself centered and ready to go. I just needed that time. And that was one of the adjustments that I had to make as a coach when I got back into it is finding that time period, that time for me to be selfish, and I've got to get myself there. And I really like that, especially like in huddles, Tony. Are you talking like when you had your kids in your huddles? Hey, let's just breathe here. How did you handle that?
A lot of times it's like, hey, I get right now it's with time where the money's on the table, so to speak. I'll just take a deep breath here and relax a little bit. And then, try to get them to focus on the task at hand and not get so wrapped up in the circumstances of it with the pressure and the stress, and different things like that. Just try and get them to focus on the task at hand and just to kind of slow down and get their equilibrium.
Mm-hmm. I'll piggyback on that, Tony, in the huddles, and talking to your kids in the huddles. And I get zero credit for this, and I give all the credit in the world to one of my former assistant coaches, Sarah Goodwin. And we were playing, I forget who we were playing, somebody some night or whatever. And it was a close game. I think we were ahead a little bit. And, sometimes you play not to lose instead of going out to win. And Sarah, there was like 2 minutes left in the game. We broke the huddle. And she said, hey, girls, go out there, go out and win the game. Go out and win the game. And that was such a great phrase. And when I heard that from her, I'm like, that is awesome. That is something that I'm going to try and continue to use for the rest of my career. Go out and win the game. Because that a lot of times your mistakes are made and they feel that pressure. You get tight, you don't want to screw up, you get a little bit too conservative and saying, hey, we're going to be aggressive, I'm going to be aggressive, I'm going to be, there's a reason why we have a 10-point lead. I'm not going to squeeze the ball so tight that I pop it here or get too rattled, whatever. Go out and win the game. And I loved that phrase. And again, the Goody deserves all the credit with that one. It's just a terrific phrase that I think that's something when you get into these pressure situations, it helps your players relax and helps them refocus. Hey, we've got to be the aggressor. We've got to do the things that got us here in order to really finish this thing off the way that we should. It's something you can even say in the pregame locker room, hey, let's go out and win this game. Let's go. We've got to take it from Kennedy tonight. Let's go out and take it from him. And I just love that one. And I really appreciate Sarah for bringing that up.
Yeah, and that's a lot of times, to be honest with you, when we go in at halftime, that's one of those things that we address with them is the fact that, if you're in the lead, hey, this thing's not over. You don't get a half a point or a half a win from being up at halftime. We still have to go out there and be aggressive, with our foot on the gas and win this game.
Mm-hmm. Coaches, are you looking for a way to improve not only your players, but your parents' perspectives on what they should expect when they come to your program at the high school level? Well, A Pen and a Napkin has something for you, your families, your players, your parents, and maybe even yourself as well. Varsity Preparation Academy, the first annual Varsity Preparation Academy, is going to take place May 3rd and 4th, 2025, here in Omaha, Nebraska, at Omaha Marion High School. That's at 7400 Military Avenue here in Omaha. This is for girls basketball players grades 6 through 9 going into the 25-26 school year. VPA is all about educating parents and players to prepare themselves for the varsity sports experience, both on and off the floor. I'm taking all the things that I've learned in my career from all the camps that I've gone to, all the camps that I've worked, all the stuff that I've done on my own here, from USA Basketball to Snow Valley to Point Guard College to the stuff that I've done, and we're combining it all into one really, really intense weekend to help these future varsity athletes get ready for the varsity level. We're going to work on skill sessions on the floor. We're going to have many sessions on the floor talking about important things about the, you know, like why coaches substitute, the importance of routine, different things like that. And then we're going to have classroom sessions where we're going to sit down and talk about different things that are going to be important for the development of the player and the parent. We're also going to have a parent meeting to talk to parents about what to expect in the high school experience, what they should be looking for as their child goes through this. So coaches, pass this on to your players, to your parents. I think it's going to be a really, really good deal. It's $175 for the weekend. That's literally less than $10 an hour that they're going to pay to get this great experience, t-shirts, binders for note-taking, all sorts of different things. Meals are going to be provided. We are going to take care of your players and your parents. A pen and a napkin is going to be there to help you out. Always done that, and we're going to do this once again on a different wavelength, on a different level, with the first annual Varsity Preparation Academy, May 3rd and 4th, 2025, here in Omaha, Nebraska.
You know, another one that I'll give one of my assistant coaches a lot of credit for, Joe Benedict is his name. We worked together probably 7, 8, 9 years ago anyway. He was really into visualization. He talked about, you know, when he was going through coaching classes, and that was kind of a big movement, was that visualization technique. And so he would talk about it a lot with free throws. That was probably the area that he had the most success with it in. But basically just making sure that you can visualize yourself being successful and making a key play, and also being able to kind of keep your poise and composure in those high pressure situations. But if you can take the time to visualize it ahead of time in a calming type of environment, I think it can help you when those real moments arise.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I had visualization down as well, those mental reps. You know, imagine that ball going through the basket. My high school coach, I forget, there was a term that he used. It wasn't visualization, but essentially that's what he had us do before games. And we would lay, he would turn out all the lights, we would lay down, and he would talk, I forget, you know, just basically affirmations and visualize that ball going through the basket, visualize you're going to get that great box out when we need to get that box out or whatever. And it was interesting, I guess, at the time, but I think it's been much more refined over the last 30 years or so since I last donned the uniform of a Sheldon Orab back in the day. Visualization, mental reps, that's something I had down as well, Tony. So I agree with you there. If that's something that you are into and you feel like you could communicate that well, did you give him freedom to kind of talk about that with the kids, Tony? How did you guys work that?
Yeah, just when we got to that time, because free throws were kind of his thing. And when we got to that time of the year, because we were playing some high pressure games, just gave him the platform and allowed him to do that. And to be honest with you, one of the kids that he had a lot of success with, Paige Hendrickson, she hit some big free throws for us in a very, very key moment to help us to get to the state tournament. And I give a lot of that credit to him because of the fact that he had worked through that with her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's awesome. You know, and I think it's a huge compliment to you to, you know, and I think we're both in the same vein of you gotta give your assistant coaches those voices. I talked about it with Sarah, you're talking about with your guy. It's important that you're not gonna have all the answers, and stepping back and allowing them kind of to go into their area of strength. I think that's a really, really important part of having your players relax as well, because they know you're using your whole staff, and they can go to Coach Smith, Coach Johnson, Coach Baldwin, whatever, and you know, they're gonna feel comfortable with that as well. So I like that as well. So one of the things I had, Tony, putting your players under pressure in practice. And not having it be that big a deal. You work on those special situations, especially the farther you go on in the season. And so, hey, tie game, 20 seconds left. I know I did this before. Girls, remember, we just worked on this situation last week. It's tied. It's 20 seconds left. The ball's on the side. We're okay. What are we going to run here? And, hopefully they'd say, corner post or whatever we had agreed upon to run there. But putting that pressure on them, and, hey, we've succeeded in this situation before. We have repped this in practice. We have visualized it. We have talked about it. But we've actually ran it as well. And sometimes that pressure can just be shooting drills. And here's the score. Here's this. You got to get this many shots up, or you got to get this many points in this shooting drill, whether it's individual or a team. But I think that once you, as you continually challenge them, it's just another challenge that they're used to having to conquer, so to speak, as they step into their to the competition against somebody else. And so I think that putting that constant pressure on them in practice, they're under pressure all the time. This is nothing new. We do this every single day in practice in some way, shape, or form for 75% of our practice. Let's just go out here and let's finish this game off, or whatever the scenario may be. So that was another one I had, buddy.
I think that's a good one. We do a lot of things that way too, where you expose them to pressure, like you said, and the more that they can experience that, the better off it's going to be when they come in there. Because a lot of times when you get into a high stress situation, if you haven't been there before, pulse can race, doubts can creep in, whatever you want to describe it as. But the more often you're there, those things begin to kind of relax a little bit, and the more likely you are to be successful in those scenarios.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So what do you got next on your list?
Another one that I put into that paper that I was talking about earlier, besides the breathing technique, is positive self-talk. And I think a lot of times athletes can be their own worst critics, where I'm so bad, I can't do this. What am I thinking? I'm worthless. And that was stuff that we really try to help kids with and help them get rid of. One of the things that I think is very powerful is there's a phrase out there, the powerful of yet, or the power of the word yet. And just talking about, I can't do that yet, right? I haven't made a clutch free throw yet. And so just trying to give them a chance to be able to give themselves positive affirmations, all right? Just to give them that sense of, that they're in control. They have the ability, they have the skill set, they have those things to be able to do it, and to knock out those negative thoughts so that their confidence goes up. And then that helps them to be able to succeed in those high stress moments.
I read, one of the people that I studied at one point was Pete Carroll. He talked about self-talk, positive self-talk. And he said one of the keys of it, and he got this from it's an old book. I actually have a copy of it somewhere. It's from 1974. It's called The Inner Game of Tennis. And basically, it's all about positive self-talk and moving on to the next play, and using your name. Tony, you haven't made a big free throw yet. Tony, you haven't gotten that big stop yet. And using your name. Hey, Marty, calm down here. We're going to be okay. And to be honest with you, I kind of experimented with it playing tennis against my son Carter. He went through kind of a tennis phase, and two stubborn Italians out playing tennis, and neither one of them are very good. But the old man doesn't want to give up the throne quite yet, And so I would kind of start to get frustrated. I would remember back to the inner game of tennis, positive self-talk. Hey, Marty, just focus on this serve. Just focus. You're down 30-15. Just focus on this serve and make this be a good serve. And stuff like that. And it changed the mindset. And so we would talk about positive self-talk. Again, not as much as I probably should have, but we did talk about it, using that first name and helping with that visualization. I think that's positive self-talk is, those are kind of, don't you think, Tony, it's kind of two things that you combine into one there with the positive self-talk and the visualization.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and just kind of seeing yourself ball go through the hoop, or seeing yourself make the correct pass, or, you know, whatever the case may be, pulling in a difficult rebound, whatever. But yes, and, you know, if you can kind of talk yourself through those things, it makes it, you know, such a better experience for you, and not riding that roller coaster of emotions where you're tearing yourself down.
Mm-hmm. My next one here would be, you know, just, you know, and this is pretty simple. A lot of coaches do this, just one-on-one conversations, you know, building kids up. I was okay with, you know, telling you, hey, you know, I had done this before. Hey, you know, if we're down one and there's 15 seconds left, we're running something for you, you know, knowing that, hey, I believe in you. I believe in you. I believe in what you can do. This is how we're going to handle this, different things like that. But, you know, again, that steady stream of one-on-one conversations, communicating with the kids, letting them know how much I believed in them. And again, positive self-talk with them, trying to build them up, especially in the last week or two of the season. One of the things that I tried to do was, especially when we were like doing shooting drills, hey, we are shooting it so well right now. I love the way we're shooting the ball. I love the way the ball's coming off the hand here. You know, I keep doing that. Like, hey, we knocked down another one, you know, and making a big deal out of it, because, you know, shooting under pressure, and that's, you know, it's hard to make tough shots under pressure. And, you know, so having those one-on-one conversations and then publicly kind of trying to build the team up in front of them and letting them know, you know, sometimes I would say, you know, I didn't do this very often, Tony, but every once in a while I would say, hey, if we're down one with 20 seconds left, I would say this in front of the team. We're getting the ball to Mamie. Let's say Mamie was probably the best athlete I ever coached. We're getting the ball to Mamie and we're running fist down or whatever the play might be. And she's going to take us home. That's who we're going to trust here, you know? And that allowed that player to know, hey, I'm getting that call. Coach believes in me. I feel good about that. You know, and that's a calculated risk, because sometimes I fully get that. That can kind of backfire on you in a lot of different ways if you don't follow through with it. If you decide to go fist up for Mary instead of Mamie, you know, that looks bad. But, you know, those one-on-one conversations and building them up in front of their teammates were some of those things that I tried to do to kind of have them relax under pressure, because they know that, hey, I believe in you. I think you're mentally tough enough to handle this burden, and you're the one that's going to take us home here.
Yeah, I think communication is so very, very key. You know, like, we've had situations before where a kid was injured and you're going to go tell who's starting, who's going to step in and take that spot. And so I think the more that you can give them a heads up on things, like you're saying, hey, there's 15 seconds left. The ball's going to be in your hand. You're either going to score or you're going to get us a really good look for a teammate. You know, I think those are wise words of wisdom there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I got a couple more things, buddy. What do you got?
Yeah, the next one I would go through with this would be like routine and rituals. And I think that's so very, very important. You know, I remember when they were talking about the moon landing and, you know, with Neil Armstrong and them, and people, you know, one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind. But some people will tell you that wasn't the first words that he said. The first word that he said was just like practice, because they had practiced and practiced and practiced it so much that when they got ready to do it, that was what he was leaning back on, was that preparation. And so when you can go back to your routine and ritual, so like free throws, you know, if you bounce it three times and spin it before you shoot it, do it every time. Mm-hmm. Because in the beginning of the game, if you get fouled in the first quarter, you go to the line for two free throws. If you have that routine at the end of the game, when you get fouled, you're down two and it's 1-1 and there's 2 seconds left. If you go back to that routine, it's going to help you to feel centered. And I think that's going to be very, very beneficial for you. And so just having those routine and rituals that are out there can provide a sense of familiarity that help to lessen the nerves in those chaotic situations.
Yeah. And I think that even starts from the beginning of the game. You know, we are going to get to the gym at approximately, I like to get there about 60 minutes before game time, 60 to 65 minutes. We're going to go out on the floor at this time. We're going to go in at 30 minutes before, you know, the game starts, you know, and just routine. Same thing with halftime. We're not going to change. This is our routine. This keeps us consistent. Those routines, those rituals, I think are so, so very vital. Now, again, you run the risk of you get knocked off your routine and then something doesn't feel right or whatever it may be. And that, you know, but then you just got to figure it out at that point. But that's the risk that you run. But I would much rather be a routine and ritual guy than just kind of winging it, because I think it does help with that calmness. It helps players relax. They know what their routine is. You know, which kind of your pregame routine, Tony?
You know, ours, it depends. You know, and I joke with my guys a lot about they have to be so mentally tough, because it seems like we don't ever have the same schedule going week to week. Like, sometimes we play first, sometimes we play second. Sometimes we play on Tuesday, Friday night, sometimes it's Monday, Thursday, or perhaps even Saturday. And so one of the things I guess I try to do with them when we play second is I send them into the locker room after the, usually when we play second, we play with the JV girls. After the JV girls come out, they go into our team room. I try to hop in there with them towards the end of the third quarter. We go over the scout real quick. I've got the diagrams up on the board. And then when we come out to warm up, 15, 20 minutes, depends upon what school we're at, we stay out there. I know some coaches like to pull them in 5-6 minutes left, whatever the case may be. But I leave them out there. I just think it's less hassle going in and out as far as things go. And so those are some. And then the other thing, shoot arounds. We always shoot 3 to 3:30, unless it's a Saturday morning, then we might come in early and do something like that. But we usually shoot 3 to 3:30, and it's kind of the same thing. We do what we call our little warm-up there with some ball handling and stretching. We go into our shooting stuff with one-hand form, partner shooting. We then go into our footwork series with our box drills and stuff like that. But it's usually the same routine every single game day as far as our stuff goes there.
Yeah, very similar. Very similar. You know, get there. I would hang out for the first half of the JV game, watch. I tell my kids to go in after the JVs come out, and kind of gave them the freedom, do whatever the heck you want to do. But once I step in that room, you better be ready to go. We'd kind of watch most of the JV third quarter, but towards the end of the third quarter, go off, do my breathing stuff, really start to get locked in myself. Really tried to time it where I came into the locker room with about 4 minutes left to go in the JV game. You know, as soon as I walked in, they'd start their focus song is what we called it. And, you know, I only had about 2 minutes to write stuff on the board, which is probably good for them. And then I talked for 3 to 5 minutes, and then we go out and warm up, you know, and that was our routine. And I think that helps. That routine really, really helps. So last thing I've got, Tony, and I don't know how much more you've got, but I've got one more thing here. I think it's important to have the support of teammates. You know, you've talked numerous times on the pod about your team pickups. You know, we're going to pick each other up and those type of things. Spread that positivity. Even when it's hard to spread positivity, you've got to find a way to make that happen. And you've got to make sure those kids are supporting one another through and through. Just making sure that everybody has each other's back. You know, sometimes you can't pick who you're going to be in the foxhole with, but if you're out on the floor with these four people, you've got to have their back. Just having that support of teammates, knowing that if I make a mistake, my teammates are still going to support me, and and we're going to move on from that mistake, and we're going to make a good play on the next play. I think that's really, really important.
Yeah, I think, you know, culture is one of the most overused words in sports, but going to what you're talking about, that's your culture.
Yeah.
You know, you want to have team support and encouragement. You want to make sure that the people that you're in the foxhole with, you have each other's back. And so knowing that your teammates and your coaches are going to support you no matter what. If you make the shot, they've got your back. If you miss the shot, they have your back. If you execute in the clutch moments, they've got your back. If it doesn't go your way in those moments, they got your back. And I think, again, that is culture. And when you have that, I think that increases your chances of being successful.
Uh-huh. That's it for my list. Tony, you got anything else?
Yeah, I'm going to throw one more out there. Okay. And this is to focus on the process, not the outcome. Yep. We do a lot of late game stuff. That's once we get in, I don't know, probably the middle of January until we're done, we late game situation it a lot. Like it's probably, I don't know, 15, 20 minutes every practice from the middle of January on. We do some stuff early, but not as detailed and in depth like that last month. And one of the things I talk with them a lot on when we're running home run, last second, we're running special or we're running whatever, is, hey, in these situations, it's going to be important for us to lock in here so that we sink to the level of our training, mm-hmm. because that's what it goes back to. When you go back to the level of your training, and if you're focused on making the shot or if you're focused on winning the game only, then all of a sudden that, what do you want to say? The pressure, the chaos, whatever you want to throw in there, it gets ratcheted up. But what we talk about with our guys is we just want to get a good shot. If we get a good shot here, mm-hmm. that is the whipped cream on top of the sundae. If the ball goes in, that's the cherry. And so we just want to make sure that we execute in those situations and give ourselves a chance. And when you take that pressure off of making the shot or winning the game, I think what happens is more oftentimes than not, you've improved your chances of doing those very things because you're focused on the execution, making the right pass, focused on taking a good shot. And a lot of times we talk about it being our shot, not their shot. And so when you focus on those things, I think your chances of being successful in those situations increase.
Get the shot you want. Get the shot we want. That was one of our huge mantras. Get the shot we want. Every single possession. Get the shot we want. We very rarely talked about field goal percentage, but what we did talk a lot about, you know, talking about process and not outcome, Tony, was our Don Meyer shot quality. You know, so four was a wide open layup or a free throw. Three was a wide open jump shot. Two was a challenge jump shot. One's a bad shot. Zero's a dead ball turnover. Minus one for a live ball turnover. Okay. And that's the math that we talked about. We very rarely would say, hey, we only shot 12% on 3-point shots the other night. We got to shoot better on threes, blah, blah. It's like, yeah. No, you say, hey, our shot quality was 2.78, which on our scale, that's a pretty good number, let's say. Okay. We did a great process. We only scored 36 points because it just didn't go in, but our shot quality was 2.78. That's fine. If we have 2.78 shot quality consistently, guess what? We're going to win a heck of a lot more than we're going to lose. So move on to the next play. You know, focus on this, keep doing what we're doing, everything's going to be all right, you know. So I I'm assuming you've had those type of conversations with your kids as well.
Yeah, I mean, we both know it's a made shot game.
Yep.
And if you make shots, you're going to win. But if you get inside their head, you know, I kind of look at it a lot like shooting is kind of like putting. If you get inside their head, you're going to get a case of the yips, and mm-hmm. your chances of shooting a high percentage are going to go dramatically down. You want to focus on, let's get a good quality shot. We're going to support you whether or not it goes in. And, you know, if you do those things, I think that the chances of you making shots at a high level go up dramatically. Like we do a thing, we take 10 minutes of threes, and our goal with, we have four spots. Our goal is to make 200 threes in 10 minutes as a team. Mm-hmm. And that's really, really hard to do. But my group this year has done it more than any group that I've had in the past. And it's been kind of fun because we're on a roll right now where the last, I can't remember how many games we all were on. We've made over 10 threes in a number of games in a row now. And a lot of it just goes down to the fact that we take good shots, we support them, and they know that they have the green light. They're not looking at the bench if they're taking a bad shot or not.
It's all coaching, let's be honest.
Yeah. No, that is definitely not the case.
Coaches, I am really excited to announce this year's lineup for our 5th annual Pen and a Napkin Coaches Clinic. This year's clinic date is Saturday, April the 12th. It's going to take place at Mary R. Queen Gymnasium, located at 3405 South 119th Street here in Omaha. We've got three on-court demonstrators. Andy King, the head boys basketball coach at Elkhorn North High School, will get the day started with his clinic on developing your team through 5-on-5 controlled scrimmages. Jody Steyer, my good friend from Iowa State University, the associate head coach at Iowa State with the women's basketball team, is going to talk about individual player development in small group settings. Jamie Smith, the head girls basketball coach at Solon High School in Iowa, one of the best I've ever seen, teach about shooting fundamentals, is going to talk to us about how to put together a great shooting workout for your players. Coach Smith won a state championship last year at the Class 3A level in Iowa. Those are three on-court demonstrators. Then we're going to have three off-court demonstrators. Our lunch keynote speaker is my guy Raz Vanderloo, the head boys basketball coach at Sioux City East High School. And also Raz is very involved with USA Basketball. I'm just going to let Raz cook. He's going to talk to us just with a basketball smorgasbord of topics about what Raz wants to talk about that day. Then we're going to have two smaller breakout sessions. Lucas Dollinghouse, the head boys basketball coach at Johnson Brock here in high school, highly successful program. He's also an administrator, and he's going to talk about coaching through an administrator's eyes along with some other things. Our other breakout session is Weekday Wade Coulter, the head girls basketball coach at Gretna East High School, and he's going to talk about building a pressure defensive system. One of the great things about the Pen and a Napkin Clinic is, in addition to our presenters, we also have two designated breakout sessions where you will get the opportunity to discuss various topics with other coaches attending the clinic. These sessions are a great way to pick the brains of your peers at the clinic, and it's one of the most enjoyable points of our annual clinic. And then, hey, after a long day of learning about hoops, it's time to kick back and relax. We're going to have an optional post-clinic social at Wine 121. It's right down the street from Mary R. Queen, about a mile and a half down the road. I want to thank my friend TK, Tom Crable, for opening his doors to the clinic again. It's just $15 per coach for anybody that wants to join us there. Our Pen and a Napkin Clinic is one of the most affordable clinics in America. I mean, it is really, really, really affordable. You're going to get over 7 hours worth of information. That's $60 for a coach. If you're just a singular coach that wants to come up and check it out, it's $60 a coach. If you bring yourself and another coach from your staff, it's $110. Three coaches from your staff, $150. If you bring four or more coaches from your staff, it is only $45 per coach. We've got a sliding scale. It's all about getting better at an affordable price. So if you are interested in signing up for our Pen and a Napkin Clinic, look to the flyer on Twitter and mail it in. You can scan it in. You can do all those different things, or you can DM me on Twitter, or you can email me penandanapkin@gmail.com. Registrations are due by Thursday, April the 10th, 2025. Coaches, do not miss out on one of the best coaching clinics in America. Well, we know, Tony, what is the case and who always performs well and relaxes under pressure. You're darn tootin', buddy. The Europeans are on top of it. That is who they are. Tony, I've got trivia tonight here. Here it is. Are you ready, sir, for some trivia? All right. Mac McClung. Is that how you say the dude's name?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Won the slam dunk contest for the third year in a row last night, I guess. That is a lot of 10-day contracts for him to be eligible for that dunk contest every year. My question to you, Mr. Viss. In what year was the first modern NBA slam dunk contest at All-Star Weekend?
Let's go 1986.
That is incorrect.
Earlier than that?
Yes.
1983.
That is incorrect.
Still earlier?
Later. So you got a 50-50 shot to get it right. Yeah.
Let's go with the famous book, 1984.
Thank you, Orwell.
Yes, and it counts. You are correct.
It was in Denver, Colorado for the All-Star game. Do you want to take a guess who won?
Who? Was it Larry Nance?
It was Larry.
Oh, yes, 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 yes. Unbelievable job by Tony Davis.
Yes, Larry Nance over Dr. J. Dr. J, the sentimental favorite. Larry Nance pulled out. He did the two. I still remember watching it as a kid. He had two he dunked two basketballs on the same dunk, which is where I picked it up from when I won the Sheldon Orab JV slam dunk contest in 1990, you know. So
is that when you beat Jungers in the finals?
Yeah, his brother Dave. Dick wasn't much of a Skywalker. Dave was the one that kind of really got up there. So
I could have pegged Dick as a Muggsy Bogues, but I guess not.
Not to get sidetracked too much, but that never happens on this podcast. We used to play at the Junger's farm, and they had a hoop on their garage, detached garage out in their driveway, and it was about 9.5 feet high. So it was just high enough that, you know, you really had to stretch to get up there and dunk it. But if you had enough hops, you could get it. You know, that 6 inches made a big difference for us earthbound Sheldon Orabs in the early 90s. So, but when somebody did throw it down at the Junger's farm, Mel Allen said,
"How about that?"
So, Tony, what a weekend for basketball. Let's start here. Men's college basketball. Tom Izzo has passed Bobby Knight for all-time wins in Big Ten history. 354, I believe, is the number that he got to. And, I mean, just a remarkable, remarkable run for Coach Izzo, and that's why he's one of the legends in the game.
Yeah, he's definitely a legend of the game. You know, you go back to his days as an assistant with Judd Heathcote at Michigan State before taking the program over. I read a post earlier from his son, Steven, with his comments on what his dad has done, and just amazing. And so congratulations to Coach Izzo, one of my favorite college men's basketball coaches, just very classy, does things the right way, and usually has his team peaking at the right time in the March Madness.
Yeah, and they've got a gauntlet here. You know, they got out to the big run early on in the conference, but now, you know, they lost it. They went out to the West Coast, lost to both Los Angeles teams, then got upset by Indiana, which would have been kind of serendipitous for him to break the record against Indiana. They beat Illinois today to break the record. But listen to this murderer's row down the stretch for them. Purdue, Michigan, at Maryland, home against Wisconsin, at Iowa, and then home versus Michigan. That's their last six games. So,
outside of Iowa, that's going to be tough.
Yeah, yeah, it is. Did I ever tell you my Michael Plum, Tom Izzo story? Yeah. So, you know, Michael worked for Fred, and they were playing Michigan State. And This is like, you know, 90 minutes before the game, and managers are just sitting on the benches, and they're just kind of, you know, BSing or whatever. And Michael's kind of turned talking to everybody, and they're sitting on the visitor's bench because that's where they're going to be warming up in front of before the game starts, right? So Michael's sitting there, he's got his back turned, and he's on the end of the group of four or five guys. And all of a sudden, he feels somebody sit down next to him. He turns. It's Tom Izzo. And he's like, "Hey, you want to coach for me tonight?" And Michael's like,
"Coach Izzo."
And he's like, "You know, Coach Izzo spent 2 or 3 minutes, you know, talking to Michael. What's your name? What's your major? Where are you from? How do you, you know, like working? Because Hoiberg's son walked on at Michigan State, you know, so they're a pretty close relationship there, you know. That was, you know, Michael's, you know, and obviously it was just a 2 or 3 minute interaction, but Michael said he was just the nicest, most genuine guy in the world, you know, and he really enjoyed it. So
you can see that when he reacts or when he interacts with his former players, just the love and respect they have for him.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So we had some bangers this weekend, Tony. We had ourselves some high intensity ball games this week. This weekend. Some surprises. One big surprise. Let's talk. I would say of the four games we're going to discuss here, I would say for me the biggest surprise was UConn just demolishing South Carolina on the road. Snapped their 71-game winning streak. Wasn't so much that they beat them, but they beat them like a drum. It was really, really impressive. Carl and I watched a lot of the second half here. We didn't get to watching it till halftime, but we watched most of the second half, and boy, Connecticut looked really, really good today.
Yeah, in fact, if I remember correctly, I think that after that game was over, the betting favorite to now win the women's national championship would be your UConn Huskies, and that's the first time all season that the betting favorite has not been the South Carolina Gamecocks. But after beating them like a drum, that definitely is something to keep in mind. And then Ozzie Fudd, I hope I'm saying that right. Anyway, yeah. I believe she was 2 out of 10 in the first half, and then at one point in the second half, I think she was 8 out of 10. Mm-hmm. But just showed up big time. And it'll be interesting to see what she decides, because she can come out and be in the WNBA draft. I know some mock drafts have her going as high as third, but if she plays like she did today, she might be a really good look at that number one of two spots.
Yeah. Well, and I think that this is what we all thought we would see from the FUD Becker's backcourt for the duration that they were going to be in school together. You know, and Ozzie has really struggled with injuries. Becker's has struggled with injuries, not as bad as FUD has. But I think I heard today on the telecast, their classmates, they're both seniors, I think, academically, but they have only played in 36 games together in their Connecticut career. And I could be wrong with that number, but I think I heard that right on the telecast that, let's say they're at game 120 that they could have played in together, you know, just randomly. They've only played in 36, which is just absolutely amazing. But I think this is kind of what we thought we would see from this pairing, what we saw here today. And I hope for their sake, you never want great players to struggle, especially with things that they can't control, and injuries are something that they can't control. So I hope that for their sake, I hope they continue to play well the entire season. If they end up winning a national championship, great. If they don't, if they get knocked out, I hope they play well while they do, because I want to see great players play great and have the opportunity to play well. And so, let's see what happens with them.
Yeah, I mean, when you have kids that put in the time and overcome all the things injury-wise that both of them have had to overcome, you root for them and you want them to end their college careers and go on to their professional careers and play at the highest level that they can and just continue to build upon the momentum that women's basketball currently has. Mm-hmm.
Coaches, you know just as well as I do that we're always looking for new and different ways to motivate our players and programs. But sometimes it's hard to find that perfect source that we're looking for. Over the past 25 years, I've collected hundreds of handouts to help motivate my players and programs. And now I'd like to share some of my favorites with you. The A Pen and a Napkin 101 Best Handouts booklet is now available for to you for only $15. In this booklet, you'll find motivational material for all types of situations and individuals to help you communicate your values to your players and program. For ordering information, you can either DM me on Twitter or email me at apenandanapkin@gmail.com for details. Coaches are absolutely loving our Taking Over a New Program booklet. As many of you know, I spent 2 years outside of coaching, and during that time, I hung a note card in my workspace at school that said, "Strip the house down to the studs." I took that time to really rethink and reorganize my thoughts on what it takes to run a transformational program. As I prepared for the possibility of coaching again, I organized these thoughts into this 96-page booklet. How much do I trust this booklet? I used this booklet as I went on interviews to help sell myself and my vision for what my new program would look like. If I'm using it to sell myself, why wouldn't I recommend it to you, my listeners? This booklet will help you look at any part of your program, no matter what stage you're at in your program, and help improve it in some way. It's all yours for only $15, which includes shipping and handling. For more information, email me at apenandanapkin@gmail.com. Well, let's talk about another pretty impressive performance here on the women's side of things. Juju Watkins would get some minutes pretty much anywhere she went, Tony. What do you think?
She's a baller. You know, she played here in Iowa City not that long ago. That was probably their most disappointing loss of the year. And you watched and it's like she didn't have a great game that day. And I think it gave the Iowa fans a great appreciation for Kelly Fierbach and the job that she did on her defensively. But the other night against UCLA, she was by far the best player on the court. When you sit there and take a look, you know, as far as Caitlin Clark and what she did, when Juju Watkins, everything is said and done, that scoring record's going to be hers.
Yeah. If she stays in that long, you know, if she stays, because I think, have they changed the rules for when they can come out for the women's
If you part? Have your degree, you can come out after your junior year, but you have to have your degree.
Okay. All right. Yeah, she, you know, 38 points, I think 11 rebounds, the craziest stat.
You have like eight block
shots. Yes.
That's like my career.
Including pickup games.
Yes, I'm definitely. If you don't include pickup games, I don't know if I had two.
No, yeah, you know, a lot of them were kind of the coming off the ball and you know, on a double team and swatting somebody or that type of deal. Yeah, just incredible. Eight blocks. I you know, and if I went on YouTube, I could find it. My guess is it just reminded me a lot, you know, minus the three-point shot because it's a different time. But that's kind of what Cheryl Miller probably looked like in a lot of ways, just scoring wherever she wants. She did a little at the elbow pivot. And again, I don't like, you know, making this type of comparison, but the footwork was kind of a Kobe-esque kind of little shake, you know, Snow Valley box drill, Tate's lock box drill, turnaround jump shot from about 15 feet, just a beautiful mid-range shot. It was just really, really impressive performance by her. You know, even then UCLA had a chance to win, but I think USC outscored them 24-8 in the fourth quarter. You know, they were down 6 or 8 going into the fourth, and they end up pulling away and end up winning by about 11. So it was a really, really impressive performance by USC. So let's talk. Let's stay in the women's game here. LSU and Texas. So 6 of the top 10 teams in the last few days have squared off against each other. LSU and Texas. LSU had a big lead early in the first half, and then Texas just kept chipping away. And they eventually knock off LSU in Texas. I think it's Texas's 10th win in a row. This is their second big win in a week. Last weekend, they knocked off South Carolina. This week, they knock off LSU. And knock me over with a feather. Here we have Vic Schaefer with his team playing their best ball at the end of the season.
Yeah, I don't think anybody in women's college basketball wants to see Texas on the other side. They are tougher than a $2 steak and get after you both offensively and defensively. Madison Booker is really, really good.
Yes.
Rory Harmon looks like she's making her way back after that serious knee injury a year ago. They've got a two-headed monster in the post. And Texas, they're playing as well as anybody. I get you're going to have some shuffling going around because of some of the teams that lost and different things. It would not surprise me to see Texas at the end of the season as the overall number one seed.
Yeah, they've won, like I said, 10 in a row. The last four here, over 24th ranked Vanderbilt, at home against South Carolina, on the road against Kentucky, who's playing very well right now. They beat them by 18, and then they come back and beat LSU by 7 here today. And like you said, yeah, Booker is a stud, man. I love watching her play. She's really, really good. She wears the 35 in honor of Kevin Durant, and she's just outstanding player. So, men's side. When you're talking number one and number two, and you're talking Auburn and Alabama, you feel like you should be at the Iron Bowl, but no, it's the middle of February and we're actually indoors with this here. I watched a good chunk of this game here. Tony, Auburn got up 9-0 early, and that was kind of the margin for the entire game. Alabama just kind of, they'd get it down to 3, and then Auburn would push it back to 8. I think at one point in the second half, Auburn had pushed it all the way out to like 15 or 16. Alabama made a big run. I think at one point they tied it, but I don't think they ever took the lead. Auburn really, really impressed. I was really impressed with Auburn, their toughness, their execution. I don't think Alabama played their best game. I think some of that goes to Auburn, and credit to Bruce Pearl, former Iowa Hawkeye assistant coach, and his program. But it was a really, really fun game to watch, Tony.
It was. And Mark Sears, who's Alabama's point guard, normally teams have a hard time staying in front of him. Auburn had a guard that was able to do that, which really limited Alabama's effectiveness offensively. Alabama shot the three really poorly. And like you mentioned, Alabama did end up tying it. Sears had a look at a three to put him up, missed it. And then a freshman kid for Auburn came down, hit a three, and that kind of re-energized them again. And then Auburn goes out and wins that game. And then I would simply say this, Auburn has been the best, most consistent team from the beginning to where we are currently in men's college basketball. And it would not surprise me to see them cutting down the nets at the end of the NCAA tournament this season.
They are a really, really complete basketball team, Tony. You know, they've got post players, they've got shooters, they've got defense, and it's not like they've ducked anybody. I mean, they've played Iowa State. They've gone out. They lost to Duke, but you know they beat Purdue. Obviously they're running the gauntlet here in the SEC. They beat Tennessee, Ole Miss. They lost to Florida. You're going to lose a couple of games here and there. But I agree with you, Tony. I think if I had to take your retirement money and place it on somebody here at the sports book, and you forced me to put it on somebody, it'd probably be either Auburn or Duke. I think Duke is a dramatically different team than they were earlier in the season, just because they're a lot younger than a lot of these teams. But Auburn would probably be, 1A, 1B, just depending on what I'm feeling that day. So, what a fun weekend of basketball. Just a lot of really, really good stuff there. So,
yes, it was the best weekend so far.
Yep. Tony, who's up for you? Who's moving up your chain of admiration here?
Michaela Blakes, who is a freshman guard on the Vanderbilt women's team. She scored 55 points today, which is the most all time by a freshman, breaking Elena Deladon 54 her freshman year. I believe she was at Delaware, if I remember correctly, when she did that. But Michaela Brooks, that was her second over 50-point game. She had a 53 in an earlier game. But yeah, she is impressive. And if I remember correctly, I think there was a deal where her brother also plays, and his team is escaping me right now, but he had a game-winning shot. And then the next, I think she hit a game-winning shot the day before, he hit a game-winning shot the next, and the dad was at both games. Wow. And so kind of a neat story there with the Blakes, both Division I basketball players, both really, really good at what they do.
That's cool. Hitting the game-winning shot, and the dad gets a chance to be at both of them. Yeah, that's pretty good stuff. I did see Blakes and 55 on the scroll somewhere, but I didn't know the backstory to it though. So I appreciate that, Tony. Thank you very much.
Call me the Paul Harvey of moving on up.
Good day. I am up on the Florida Gators men's basketball team. They are 20-3. They're better than that now. Sorry, wrong button. 22-3, and they have had to deal with a ton of distractions. There were some very disturbing allegations against their head coach, Todd Golden. He has, at least for now, been cleared of any wrongdoing. But we'll see how that part of it plays out. But for them to continue to play through those distractions, and again, we've talked about the SEC. Auburn, Alabama, and Florida right now would be three of the four number one seeds in the NCAA tournament, according to most of the bracketologists. Like I said, they're 22-3. They're playing outstanding basketball. Walter Clayton Jr. Leading them and scoring 17 points a game. Just, again, kind of a really, really complete team. This SEC this year is kind of reminding me of the Big East 40 years ago when we had Georgetown, St. John's and Villanova all in the Final Four in that epic 85 Final Four, and we very well could see essentially a conference tournament in the Final Four this year with some of these SEC schools. Of course, you know, they have like 62 teams in the conference now or whatever it is. So, you know, that makes it more likely than it ever was. But Florida is playing some really good ball right now, and they are who I am up on today, Tony. So
very good choice.
Yeah, thank you, sir. Who are you down on?
I won't get to say this very often, but I am down on the South Carolina Gamecocks. They got, obviously, we talked about that earlier, they got walked today by UConn, and then last week got taken out by Texas. Don't get me wrong, two of the very best teams in women's college basketball. But when you go and take a look at them winning the title last year and what all they had back, maybe myself included, were anointing them the 2025 national champs before we even played the season. Okay. And right now, I don't even know if they're a one seed.
Yeah. We were, like I said, we started watching at halftime, and every time they flashed to Dawn Staley on the sideline, Carla goes, "It looks like she's going to throw up." I'm like, she's not used to getting her butt kicked like this. Even when she's lost games over the last few years, they've been nip and tuck the whole way through. And it's been a long, long time, I'm sure, since she's lost a game by 30 points. I'm sure at some point they flashed a graphic up and said it's been since, you know, 2004 since Dawn Staley has lost, you know, by this many points or whatever. Yeah, they got worked, you know, I think South Carolina shot it poorly and UConn shot it very well. And like we talked about earlier in the pod, it's a miss or make game, and they made it. But yeah, they're struggling. They got some time to figure it out, but not nearly as much. They only have four regular season games left before they get into the SEC tournament. But of course, you know, a lot of times, you know, with these bigger conferences, the power conferences, they play their women's and men's conference tournaments on opposite weekends. And a lot of times the women's tournament goes first. So they've got some stuff now. Their schedule softens here. Arkansas, Vanderbilt, Ole Miss is decent. Vanderbilt, okay, solid, you know, good team, but they've got a chance to get themselves figured out here too. So, Tony, I am down on the NBA All-Star Weekend. As mentioned earlier, the trivia question, I still say today
37 years later that Dominique Wilkins got robbed of the NBA Slam Dunk Championship in 88 in Chicago Stadium. I went to school the next day. I had the VHS tape. I was like, I felt like the Zapruder film, you know, Dominique got robbed, you know. This was an event. It was part of it, you know, and to see these guys play, together and the way that the game was played. And now it's just, ugh, it's just, you know, now we've got four teams of eight or whatever, however they've got it sliced and diced up. You know, the skills competition, they're not even shooting balls off the, did you see Wimby and Chris Paul just take balls and throw them off the rack or whatever?
Yep.
So they could get through the skills competition quicker. I mean, it's just, they got a guy, yeah, he's won three slam dunk contests in a row, and that's, you know, and again, Mac McClung is a much better basketball player than I'll ever be, but he doesn't even play in the league. You know, I mean, you know, is this where things have gone? And it's just, As somebody who grew up, you know, diehard Gen Xer, who this was an important part of your childhood formation of falling in love with basketball, it's really disappointing to see this event kind of get to the point where it's like, I don't really care whether I watch it or not, you know, and that's unfortunate.
Yeah, I mean, you take a look at what it has become, and you turn around and look at the Four Nations thing in hockey, and it's like, I like that hockey thing. Can we do that? I don't know if
ding,
you saw
ding,
the fight
ding.
Last night, but that was awesome.
Three fights in 9 seconds. That was straight out of Slapshot. Like I said, you know, it's just disappointing. And I don't know. I hesitate to just say it's this person's fault. I don't think it's Adam Silver's fault. I don't think it's the player's fault. I don't think it's the coach's fault. I don't think it's me. I think it's a combination of a lot of different things, and those are pieces of the recipe that have taken it in that direction. So it's just disappointing. Like I said, as this was an important thing of my childhood, it was a big part of why I fell in love with the game, and to see it kind of deteriorate to this point is just. I'm not mad. I'm just disappointed. So, but you know what's not disappointing, Tony, is episode number 120 of the coaching staff, having your players relax under pressure. Tony, any final words?
Focus on the process, not the outcome. And if you do that, that will help them to relax and relieve a little bit of those nerves. It's never going to be perfect, but you want to give them a chance to be successful. And I think that is where you have to go and start at.
Yep. Could not say it any better there. Henceforth, I am not going to even try. So we are going to take it home from there. Episode 120. I want to thank again our sponsor, Ruiz Auto Services and Exhaust, All-American Used Cars and Trucks. I want to thank my friend Tony here. Last week of the regular season this week, is that correct?
Yeah, we got two practices and two games left, and then we are officially regular season over.
Yeah, all right. Well, finish it strong, my friend. We'll talk more about it next week. At some point next week, we'll have a topic to talk about. I'll think of something that me and Tony need to talk about, or maybe Tony will come up with something. I don't know. We'll get it figured out here. But want to thank Tony for his time. Want to thank you folks for your time. Get signed up for the Coaches Clinic, April the 12th. Get your daughter, get your players signed up for the Varsity Prep Academy in early May, May 3rd and 4th. We've got a lot of good things going on with the pen and a napkin, so go and check it out. So, coaches, as always, let's be sure to hone our craft one day at a time.